Hey folks, welcome into On Waveland, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. This is the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. We call it On Waveland because you see, sometimes home runs at Wrigley Field will go out of the ballpark onto Waveland. If you've never picked that up, you know, we could have called it On to Sheffield. We could have, but there are more righties than lefties, and I think it's actually a little harder to reach Sheffield. That's a rarity given the design of the ballpark.
I feel like Adam Dunn is who I think of when On to Sheffield would be Adam Dunn. I don't know why, but that's who I think of on the Reds.
I mean, isn't he like the only guy who reached the river in Cincinnati also? Which it's like, it's not like Pittsburgh or San Francisco where like if you crush it, you can get it there. In Cincinnati, you can't, you should not be able to do that. And yeah, he has done that.
Or Brett, if you're about to get traded, the Cubs might call for a town car that would arrive on Waveland and your car would be left in the player parking lot on Waveland. And they would, send your stuff to a different city where they're trying to win baseball games.
Yes, that is what we had in mind when we named this a few years ago. We were like, one of these days, Cubs are going to be sellers, and that is where everyone will exit after their hugs. You know what? We can start it up there because it was the buzzy thing that happened, and it's like, you know, this time of year, it's going to happen. People are going to go nuts. So, opening game of this Cardinals series, Chris Bryant is pulled, partway into the game. And of course, everybody buzzes, and the joke on Twitter is, oh, did he get any hugs? When he went out, did he get any hugs? And I think realistically, though, it was more a question of, okay, is he hurt? Because we'd seen he made a diving play earlier in the game. He had run deep into the corner on a double. And, you know, you expect that the Cubs would be overly cautious with injury concerns right now. But what's difficult to suss out in these situations in the run-up to a trade deadline is, to what extent is a team being overly cautious and it's just like, he's fine, but we're just, you know, being cautious, versus, no, there's actually a real issue here, but we kind of don't want to talk about it publicly for obvious reasons. And I think, you know, if the Cubs are doing their job at all, I don't know that we're going to know the answer to that until you just sort of see what plays out. But I'm curious what you guys were thinking when that was happening, and I'm sure you were seeing what was happening on Twitter, and just your thoughts in general about this balance that teams have to engage in when you're so close to a deadline, you know that there's a high likelihood that a particular player may draw sufficient interest to be traded, and so you don't want to signal to the world, he's hurt. But you also need to protect him for the purposes of those trade talks. And it's just a spot we haven't been in as followers of the Cubs for 7 years. And it's something they haven't dealt with in the same period of time.
Yeah, I mean, when he left the game, when we saw Ian Happ heading out to the outfield, you know, the press box kind of looked at each other and we all kind of assumed like, okay, he's banged up in some way. Like it just seemed too early for a trade. When it took a little while for the announcement to come, that's when we're like, okay, let's just do our due diligence type of thing. And some texts were sent out. But, you know, there was never really any real buzz that it was a trade outside of people making assumptions on Twitter, right? So we kind of knew what was going on. It was just about, like, what is this something significant? Is this something new? Is this the hamstring? When he dove? What was it? When we got the hamstring fatigue announcement, you know, I think a lot of people are like, what is that? What the hell does that mean? And that sounds kind of like nonsense. I'll say this. I'll say if it's all kind of like made up or just like not, or they're playing it down, they're doing a really good job of doing like a preemptive strike, because in pregame before Brian exited, Ross was talking about how, I asked him specifically, hey, Nico was double switched and then sat out all of yesterday's game. Are you just being extra cautious with the with the hamstring after the return from the hamstring. And he said yes. And he said, and he talked, he gave a long answer about like hamstring issues. You have to be extra careful. And he talked about how the training staff has been looking into this. And air travel really exacerbates the situation. It's not that it makes the injury worse. It's just like, it can trigger something in a sense. I'm kind of playing loosely with the words. This isn't a direct quote, but it can kind of trigger something in the body where it's like, okay, now you're at a higher risk to get hurt after being after recovering from this injury type stuff. So they were being cautious with Nico, and he used a word like, we keep track of yards or something like that. David Ross said, we keep track of yards. We keep track of sprints, all this stuff. They have all this data. And even so, one of the reporters kind of joked, like, who's your leader in all purpose yardage then? And he immediately said, you know, it's Chris Bryant. And he talked about Bryant a little bit and just like he's running all over the place. He didn't have an all-star break. He's playing all over the field. He's running first to third. He's doing all these things. And he's also coming off a hamstring issue, right? So he said it before the game, and then after the game, he's like, this is what I was talking about. This is why I wanted to sit him on, I'm losing track of days, but on Wednesday, that was the plan originally. Pre-game yesterday on Wednesday, we talked to him again about it, and it was what I'm kind of, where I'm feeling they're like holding back is, why did they pull him in the middle of that game? And he said it was just being extra cautious. His legs were heavy. Well, did he say something or did he do something? No, it was more the training staff saying, you know, he's been running around a lot today. Maybe it's time to be cautious. When I hear all that, I think that's being extra cautious because this is a huge asset as far as the trade deadline goes. That doesn't seem like normal behavior if it's not a trade deadline situation, right?
Can I just put a fine point on that for a moment, not to cut you off and redirect this, but what you're saying, I'll be more, put it more plainly. Were it any other month in any other season, this is not how you would at all describe a situation where a guy gets pulled mid-game. In no universe would a guy be an important player in a game against your rival if it were competitive, all these things. It wouldn't be, well, you know, we just thought we were going to be preemptive in the middle of the game because he'd been running around a lot. That is never a thing. So whether it's like, wow, they are being like over the top cautious about a potential trade asset, or there's more going on in the hamstring that they just don't want to too deep into public discourse about, it has to be one of those things. Like, it has to be, because right. This is not normal.
Part of me thinks, like, what's the point of being so cagey about the injury if, I mean, you know, the guy's going to have to go through a physical anyways. It's not like teams don't know about the issue, right? They're going to do, like, no team is going to be like, oh, we'll take your word for it. It's just fatigue. Sure. We won't even do the...
I mean, you tweeted it from your official account, so we've got it.
So, yeah, I don't know. It is weird, and I'll give every... And I will not argue with anyone that wants to say it's all BS or anything like that. It's a very odd situation, and just pulling a mid-game and then... saying, well, no, he didn't come to me and say my hamstring hurts. The training staff kind of said something, because I directly asked him, I'm like, did you see something that made you think like he re-injured it? And he said, no, it was just, you know, the training staff kind of indicated that he's been running around a lot, essentially. So that type of thing you just don't hear. So it was a little odd, but I think it is mostly just being super cautious about a guy that is likely going to be traded in the next, whatever, 9 days.
And Brett, don't you think it could be both, that the Cubs are being super cautious and that Chris Bryant might have something wrong with his leg? I mean, I'd say historically the Cubs have been pretty conservative with all of their injury timelines and treatment programs. I was talking to Ross the other day in Arizona, and he kind of laughed when I said, you know, you're now like a load management expert, like in the NBA, because that has been one of the things he's really learned this year. That's something that, whether the front office is pushing it or just the way he's communicating with the rest of the staff, like, their high performance influence is definitely something that has filtered onto the major league club. And look, I think Chris Bryant, his injuries over the years have been kind of freak accidents, like running hard to first base and twisting his ankle, or, you know, getting hit in the head with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball or whatever it was. I mean, so I don't think it's on him, but there's been lots of little things like this over the years that have kind of accumulated to where, you know, people wonder, and maybe it's why he hasn't quite sustained an MVP level year in and year out. And I wouldn't necessarily worry about his health in August and September, assuming this is, you know, pretty minor, but it's part of the kind of overall picture that a team is looking at when they're trying to acquire Chris Bryant. So I don't doubt the Cubs exaggerate injury situations, and that they're not obsessively watching this to make sure that it doesn't turn into you know, a big thing. And we're just going to kind of be guessing here until Chris Bryant's on another team by July 30th.
So it's easy, I think, enough for us to discuss this stuff from the outside and ultimately end in a place, like Patrick just said, where it's like, you know, it's probably a combination of a lot of things, and we're not really going to know until something is done. And then I think it'll become more clear, and we'll be, I think we'll get a little bit of a backfill situation. But what I wonder, and this is to your point, Sahadev, you know, if it's the training staff kind of preemptively being like, you know, he's been running a lot, we're doing load management, blah, blah, what does that conversation look like with Chris Bryant mid-game? You know, if he's not coming up and saying, yeah, I felt a little tightness, and, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, what should we do? If it's a, if it's truly a, well, we think we should get out ahead of this, when in reality, we know it is tied to the trade deadline. We know that. And surely Chris Bryant has to know that. He's not an idiot. So I just wonder what that dynamic looks like in the dugout, in the clubhouse, where you are effectively telling a guy, yeah, we're babying you a lot because we might want to trade you. Like, I just, it's awkward. I have no, what is that? Do you guys have any sense at all of like how that actually plays out for real humans in a real moment?
Well, because this is a real like hamstring issue, and they're not just like, well, we don't want you out there to get injured at all, and we're going to just say there's something going on with your hamstring. I think they've been talking a lot about this between like Ross and Bryant and the training staff. So it was already known that he wasn't playing Wednesday, right? He's looking for ways to get him off his feet as often as possible. And right, they came back, right, from a 6-1 deficit in that game. But I think at that point it was a 5-1 game when he was pulled. I could be wrong. Maybe it was still a close game. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't close, but it still was a little, still was obviously weird that he was pulled, right? Like, we all wondered what was going on. So it wasn't like, yeah, he's, it just wasn't getting rest.
I forget the precise score, but it wasn't one of those where it's like, oh, well, obviously he's just getting extra rest in a, it wasn't that kind of situation.
He was due up second the next inning. It just didn't make any sense to do that. But it was I'm assuming it's not super awkward because there's this constant dialogue of, you're banged up in a certain way. We need to find ways to get you rest here and there. If I see anything, or if the training staff says anything, we're going to be extra cautious. I mean, maybe Brian pushes back in certain ways. Sure, I don't know, but that's me speculating. We haven't heard that. We've been trying to talk to him, but obviously, you know, that doesn't always work out. So we'll see. We'll see if he has anything to say in the coming days. But he hasn't let it be known that he, like, you know, Rossi keeps pulling me or sitting me, and I want to be out there. So we haven't heard that.
Yeah, put it on the running list of questions for the July 30th Zoom when he's at his new team. I think. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just something that the Cubs have. You know, it's the Joe Madden American Legion Week philosophy just moved up a little bit here. And, oh, Chris Bryant's a grown up. He's making what, like $20 million this year. He's going to go to a team that's probably in first place. And then he's going to be what, the number one free agent on the market, or among the elite free agents who will be courted this winter. I mean, he does not strike me as someone who would disrespect management or be completely disagreeable about something like this. I think he's got a healthy respect for Ross. And I think this training staff and this high-performance department, I mean, they've been empowered here. I think if you look at when Theo shook things up after, I think it was the 2019 season, I mean, they're trying to be kind of forward thinking here and avoid, you know, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, and this is more of a kind of pitching freak thing, but I think it was like July 25th, 2012, of Matt Garza walking off the mound at Busch Stadium with an arm injury. I mean, that would really blow up whatever plans Jed has for the trade deadline if Chris, you know, blows out his hamstring here.
Well, so that raises a related point. What, you know, I was asking out of curiosity, what do we think the conversations are between David Ross and the trainers and Chris Bryant, but what are the conversations right now that Jed Hoyer is having with David Ross about these topics in advance? Because assuredly, while the lineup, the in-game decisions, all of that, I genuinely believe that is David Ross's world. I think he really does control it. I don't think it's one of those phantom manager situations. But we know that Ross has been in the front office. We know that the relationship with Jed Hoyer in the front office is supposed to be this synchronous thing. And so I'm wondering, is it just really frank? You know, is it just like, hey, just so you know, Rossi, we're going to be having conversations on this. So you do need to get out ahead of, you know, if we see that the load is increasing on Chris Bryant, or, you know, maybe don't send Craig Kimbrell out for a second inning like last night. But things like that, like what, you know, it can't just be that like Jed trusts that Ross knows, even though he probably does. Like, there's got to be dialogue about that, right? And which is probably new for both of them.
Well, it's funny because we did recently ask Ross about, like, how often he's talking to Jed. And he said, he's like, you know, twice a week, which I thought wasn't that much. I really thought even, like, in normal times, they talk more frequently. And I used to, I thought, like, especially at home, they regularly, like, come in and after a game and kind of do, like, a debrief of, like, okay, you use this guy, this guy, and this guy. We need to call up a reliever for this. Like, or, like, what are you thinking about this? Here's what, like, just kind of do a debrief. Like, that's what I thought happened, at least, you know, semi-regularly. Maybe he was playing that down when he told us, like, how often they talk. And he said, you know, he's been adamant that he doesn't really talk about the trade stuff with them. He's not really, that's not really his thing in his, as far as he tells us. But I'm assuming Jed sees the same information and he's in constant communication and letting, you know, letting Ross know that, hey, we have to be ultra aware of this, that, and the other when it comes to someone's health. So I'd be shocked if there isn't some sort of hand-in-hand work there as far as when to play, you know, when to pull back on certain players, especially someone like Chris Bryant.
And Brett, you're right. Like, there were times, no doubt, that Theo Epstein would have loved to have taken the lineup card from Joe Maddon and written him out himself, or had, like, some sort of, like, offensive coordinator quarterback headset where he could tell Joe exactly what to do. I am somewhat exaggerating that, but I do believe that from Theo and Jed, I think they have drawn some pretty clear lines there that may not exist in other organizations where front offices have a heavier kind of hand. And, you know, Sadev, I think you're also right that after every home game that Jed's there, they're, you know, sitting in Ross's office, maybe having a beer and just kind of breaking down what happened. And Ross likes it to be kind of on a need to know basis. Like, he doesn't want, like, daily updates because it's just a really distracting and doesn't give him, like, plausible deniability when he's dealing with, like, his players and his coaches. And once something is serious, it'll be presented to him. But kind of until then, and even if Jed's not there, he wasn't in Arizona, but, you know, one of his assistants will be there in constant communication with Jed and Ross. So, like, and like we said earlier, these kind of ancillary figures, like the head of high performance and athletic training, like all those guys have been kind of given their marching orders. And I think one of the strengths, or what the Cubs hope to be a strength moving forward, is that Ross is a collaborator and someone who kind of sees the big picture and someone who probably this offseason will be in Chicago a lot, like trying to figure out what the Cubs need, what they've lacked, and what they should hold on to and kind of build around.
All right. Last thing I wanted to get into today is something that I think is well-timed here, 8 days out from the trade deadline. I was thinking about how I was reading an article about, it was at CBS Sports, and I think it was RJ Anderson. And it was about the draft being moved back into July in pair with the All-Star break and how that has caused considerable issues for scouting staff on teams based on the timing and in relation to the trade deadline and the inability to sort of allocate your resources in the way that you would want. We'll leave that aside for a moment, although I would encourage folks to read it because it's an interesting read if you're a nerd, which I am, and I hope most of you are. But what it got me thinking about is this reality for the Cubs, and probably lots of other teams. I don't want to just say them, but we know what happened last year, right, where they reduced their staff significantly in response to the pandemic. I don't know that they have restaffed up in any meaningful way. Indeed, Jed Hoyer doesn't even have a GM right now. And I'm thinking about the Cubs, if they are, as we expect them to be, the sort of bell of the ball of the trade season, and if they have got to be able to make so many decisions in such a short amount of time where there is so much overlap among various teams, their needs, the scouting, the long term, the short term. I mean, when you really start digging in, these are really complex decisions. It seems very obvious, like, oh, trade this guy to this team for these guys. And no, these are very deep interrelated issues because there are 29 other teams that have their own motivations. And it's just a very complex thing. And what I'm wondering is if, from a pure manpower standpoint, might the Cubs need to be a bit more aggressive in sort of getting some of the deck cleared in terms of like making trades for, you know, and I know that, again, it's not entirely within your control, but like, I don't know how you functionally handle all of these decisions if it actually goes to like the 28th, 29th, and 30th of this month. And so I'm wondering, you know, you see the Jock Peterson deal happen very early, relatively speaking, and you wonder if it was mostly they dug the return, but you wonder if in part it was, you know what, the Braves have made a good offer, it's acceptable, let's just do it to clear one of those chairs so that we're not also focused on, okay, what can we get for Jock? Whose system do we need to scout? Who do we, you know, it's one piece done so that it all doesn't get crammed at the end. And then you're not able to have a good process, not able to make good decisions on organizational shifting decisions.
Well, I think their expectation going in was that this is going to go down to the deadline by and large. Like that's how this industry kind of works in almost any kind of setting, and that they've known for a while which direction they were going. I mean, the losing streak hadn't reached 11 games, and they were already kind of pivoting and, you know, reallocating resources and adjusting their focus. Potentially, you'd be packaging players and deals anyways, and look, I mean, this is, I think, part of the fatigue around the Cubs and some of the frustrations from the fan base and, you know, even internally of like, you know, they whacked at least, what was it, side of like 7 scouts with pro scouting responsibilities in the middle of a pandemic. And as, you know, callous as that was, you're seeing the real cost to this of now, you know, this is Jed's job. He's been preparing for this for like 2 decades. He's a grown up. Like, just do your job, make good decisions. That's what he always talks about, stacking one good decision on top of another. But like, the long range consequences of what they did was being felt like immediately the next season when you're talking about like iconic players and what you're going to do. And you're short-staffed. I mean, short-staffed was a phrase that a Cubs person used when I was talking with this individual the other day of like rewinding their offseason and how they kind of move forward. It was, yeah, you know, we were pretty short-staffed last year. And I think I don't know if you necessarily saw it in some of the signings that they made. That's not like an excuse. It's more of just the reality of what we're coming up upon here, and that, you know, the Cubs build themselves as they were going to build this like superpower organization at every single level. And, you know, they were just absolutely decimated by what happened last summer.
Yeah, I mean, as far as what Patrick kind of summed it up there, but it certainly was felt during the trade deadline, I think. And I think the 11-game losing streak kind of helped out, made sure that they didn't have to kind of straddle the line between buyers and sellers. Because if they did, I don't think they had the resources to handle that. As for, from a scouting standpoint, they had to pick a lane and really go all in on one side. Otherwise, they weren't going to be able to cover their bases in that sense. So it's certainly an issue. I don't think it's just a Cubs issue, but it you know, that's who we're talking about, and it's something that came up. And you know, I don't know if that's something that'll be addressed in as far as more scouts being hired down the line, or if adjustments are going to be made all across baseball. I know we've talked, I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast, but I've talked with others about how the draft is being changed. The pandemic changed the way scouting is being done with the draft, and there is more video work being done, which is a little frustrating, I think, for scouts who appreciate the in-person looks and see real value in that and see it as an advantage. So I you know, you have to wonder if that comes to pro scouting as well. It'd be unfortunate in my opinion, but I think, you know, this is just a direction that the game has been going for a while, actually.
One more point too, Brett. I think the Cubs are probably waiting for a lot of teams that they don't know what they're doing, right? I mean, almost outside the Mets, sure. Everyone in the National League East is just kind of like, well, we'll see where we are in 7 or 8 days.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's always the waterfall effect, that just one little thing, like, or I shouldn't say one little thing, but like, for example, when Mike Rizzo says, yeah, probably Max Scherzer isn't going to be available, probably, you know, not. Oh my gosh, it's not at all hard to imagine how the trickle-back effect that could have on the entire starting pitching market, and then probably other markets too, as teams are like, well, you know, if we might have a chance to get Scherzer later on, we'd rather wait, we don't really want to make other decisions. And so, yeah, it is absolutely the case that not a lot of this is entirely within the Cubs' control, outside of, like you guys said, their ability to deploy their resources in the right way, make good decisions in advance of the deadline so they're prepared to make quick decisions when the opportunities present themselves. And I do think about the fact that not only are they potentially short-staffed now, but you're also in a situation where there was no minor league season last year. And so you have very little even opportunity to have eyes on a lot of the potential, you know, prospects that you're going to be looking at. And so I think there's going to be, unfortunately, as is, you know, uniquely powerful in baseball, a lot of luck involved in getting this right. We think about luck in terms of like batted ball, where it just happens to land. Well, it's also probably going to be true in what prospects the Cubs are targeting right now. You have a good process in place, you try to make good decisions, but with so little information and so few eyes and brains to digest it right now, I think there's probably going to be some luck, and that might make some of us uncomfortable as the next week proceeds. So, speaking of which, we will be back at you early next week with the latest episode of Onto Waveland. This is the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Patrick Mooney and Sahadev Sharma. Get their stuff, as always, at The Athletic, which you can get The Athletic app, by the way, where you can read their great stuff and listen to this here podcast whenever you like. But you can also get us wherever you get your podcasts, and you can tell your friends about that. We appreciate you listening so much. It'll be you know, it's going to be a weird week. We haven't been in this place, like I said, for about 7 years. And here we are. We're all kind of still readjusting to it. But all I want to say is I do want one set of hugs, at least, right? Like, yeah, we haven't had this chance in a while. I just want to see one situation where it's like, it doesn't have to be a major player. It could be sort of a lesser complimentary piece. But I want to see a damn hug. And I want to be able to shout at my TV screen, "That's a hug! That's a hug!" So that's what I'm looking forward to. So thank you all very much for listening. We will be back at you soon. Take care.